This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to my podcast. I am, for those of you who are maybe first-time listeners to the podcast, I am a dental division director at the wonderful CPA firm of Ide Bailey. I've been a dental CPA, we're recording this in late April. Next Tuesday, which is the day after Labor Day, I will celebrate my 40th anniversary as a dental CPA. And it's been a very wonderful run. Working with dentists, my career has been an absolute joy. And one of the things I do for my clients is to protect them. And today, you're going to get a little protection conversation. My good friend, Brannon Moncrief from McLaren & Associates, who is a sell-side advisor, if you want to sell your dental practice to a DSO, is going to be my guest. So we are getting more and more calls at Ide Bailey. My partners, Pam Chamberlain and Don Watson, are getting calls from dentists who are saying, hey, I got a call from this DSO and I'm about to sign a letter of intent and they're going to make me this incredible offer. And what do you think? And doctors, I'm going to start the conversation off with you today before I bring Brannon on by saying to you, promise me, and my listeners are loyal to this podcast, promise me that you will not sign any letter of intent with any DSO that contacts you until you let us connect you with someone like Brannon Moncrief. It will be the best thing that you've ever done. And we're going to explain to you why. What we're going to do today, doctors, is we're going to talk to you. And I have Brannon on about once a year. Is we're going to talk to you about what the market looks like. We're going to talk to you about what you should be doing. What are the different type of deal structures? And hopefully after this hour of conversation with Brannon, you will have some of the tools to understand how this works. Because the fact of the matter is that the DSOs out there are counting on you to act alone and just sign. And we want to make sure that you're fully informed. DSOs are right for some of you, and DSOs are not right for some of you. So we're going to have Brannon come in a little bit. We'll have that conversation. I want to thank my wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 incredible CE courses available from the top clinicians in the country at a very reasonable price, including three really good video courses from me, Art Wiederman, that you can buy for a very reasonable price. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. Very excited. If you guys are getting near the end of your career and you need some help on your financial planning, our Ide Bailey Wealth Group is second to none. Please call me at 657-279-3243. Or email me at awiederman@idebailey.com. And we can help you on that end. And also, if you are not happy with your CPA, your CPA doesn't speak the language of dentistry, we got a new client from somebody who said they got a call on April 14th with a six-figure tax bill, give us a call. We take world-class care of our clients. We work with world-class people who you're about to meet one of them, Brandon Moncrief, in a moment. Again, if we can do anything to help you at iBailey to meet your personal and business financial goals, we would love to do that for you.
Be sure to check out our new iBailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Okay, with that said, folks, let me get to Brandon. Brandon is the principal and CEO of McLaren & Associates. McLaren has sold over 1,200 dental practices and $1.5 billion in market value for his clients. As I've told you, for those of you who have been on this journey with me, which, my gosh, December will be 6 years that I've been doing this podcast. I am very picky of who I have on my podcast and who I work with. I probably get one or two calls every week or emails from people. Oh, I'd like you to be on my podcast. Well, I'm very picky. So Brandon Moncrief of McLaren & Associates and I have worked together in his prior career and in his current career as a sell-side advisor. He is my guy. And he's taken world-class care of my clients. And he is located in beautiful and probably very hot Austin, Texas right now. Brandon, how you doing today? Welcome.
Doing good, Art. Thank you. Good to see you.
So again, we're going to have this. This will probably get published in October, but I guess football season's just get started. And I've been to one UT game. And it was when my USC Trojans played UT, and for the first 18 minutes, it was wonderful. And then your team just squashed us, and Governor Abbott got up on the big screen, and Matthew McConaughey got up on the big screen, and that was the end of that, right? So there you go.
Well, I live in Austin, but I don't root for the Longhorns because I'm an Aggie.
Oh, you are an Aggie?
Yes.
Oh, my. All right, well. And nobody has tried to put you out of your misery, huh?
Not yet. But we've got, I'm headed to College Station actually on Saturday for the opening game, A&M and Notre Dame. That'll be a big game.
Now that will be a long history by the time this podcast comes out. But yeah, that is fun. I am heading this weekend to Las Vegas to watch the USC Trojans play the LSU Tigers.
And that'll be a good game.
Yeah, actually, we're going to change the name of the podcast to The Art of College Football with Art Wiederman, CPA, and that's what we know. Just kidding, guys. All right, well, let's get to what everybody wants to listen to. Brandon, why don't you start telling our listeners who don't know you about your journey and how you've gotten to where you are?
I have a finance degree from A&M and spent the first 8 years of my career as a dental lender. So lending money to dentists all across the country to buy, start, and expand practices. And that's where we originally met over 20 years ago.
Yes.
Did financing for many of your clients out on the West Coast. And about 13 years ago, decided I wanted to leave lending, but did not want to leave dentistry. So I ended up purchasing a practice brokerage sell-side advisory company based in Austin and San Antonio. And I've spent the past 13 years at the helm of that company, growing it from both a doctor-to-doctor traditional practice sales perspective, but then really moving into the DSO and private equity world about 5 years ago. You know, being in Texas, we were kind of on the forefront of a lot of the private equity consolidation in the dental space. A lot of our larger clients were selling to DSOs, and we were realizing that, you know, they don't understand what their EBITDA is. They didn't understand the deal structures, the different levers involved in these deals, because they're far more complex than a traditional doctor-to-doctor practice sale. They were selling prematurely or selling to the wrong DSO and or leaving a lot of money on the table. So that's when we decided to get educated about the private equity world, build out a team, build out a process to provide sell-side advisory for large practice owners who are considering affiliating with a DSO or taking on a private equity partner. So fast forward to today, we've closed well over 200 DSO and private equity transactions in the dental space all over the country, working with both general dentists and all different types of specialties. Because I've been in the M&A dental world for 23 years, I've really seen everything that can go right and wrong in these deals, and love educating dentists about and empowering them, you know, to make good decisions with the future of their practice.
Now, folks, you have to understand, I did say earlier that Brandon is highly ethical and professional, and that's why I work with him. The real reason I work with him is that when he was in banking, he and Fred DeRude and Mac Winston invited me to play golf at Pinehurst in North Carolina. And that was very special. We had fun that time, right?
It was fun.
It was fun. And so, Brandon, let's start the conversation by talking to the listeners of private practice dentists. And doctors, you have a practice, you're hearing about all of this, you're hearing from your friends who have sold and maybe sold to private equity or DSOs. Let's start off by, what types of dental practices are DSO buyers looking for?
Yeah, so most DSOs are looking for practices with annual revenue of minimum $1.2 million. Most DSOs get excited around $300,000 in EBITDA. And at a 20% EBITDA margin, you know, you really need to be around $1.5 million in top line revenue to generate $300,000 in EBITDA. And at that threshold, that's where the valuations in the DSO world start to run away from the valuations in the more traditional practice sale, doctor-to-doctor world. Most DSOs would prefer that you've got 5+ operatories because they want to have multiple providers at every office. They would love to buy practices with multiple doctors because they pay a lot of attention to key man risk. And the more bifurcated the production is among multiple providers, the less key man risk exists. From a geography standpoint, the consolidation is really happening coast to coast at this point. It definitely kind of started in Texas, Arizona, and the Southeast, but has really heated up on the West Coast and New England more recently. Most DSOs prefer practices located within 60 miles of a major metro area, just from a recruiting standpoint of both staff and associate doctors. Those are the major, you know, points that drive demand in the DSO world.
Okay. And so, doctor, if you're doing $500,000 a year, you have to understand, or $750,000, there's got to be enough money to pay you to buy your practice, to pay you as an associate. And like Brandon says, minimum 1.2, 1.5 is ideal and bigger than that. What about specialty practices, Brandon? I know DSOs love those in many cases, right?
Yeah, we work with all different specialties. So there are multi-specialty DSOs that, you know, focus on, you know, pedo, ortho, OMS, or endo-perio combination. There's general DSOs that will acquire specialty practices in geographies where they have significant density because they can, you know, refer the life cycle of the patient. I would argue that, you know, oral surgery practices and pediatric practices probably have the highest demand and are seeing the highest valuations at the moment. So regardless of the type of practice you have, there are buyers in the DSO world that will be interested.
Okay. Now I want to get into the why, and that's a big thing for me. We did a webinar with you last night, actually. It was outstanding. Let's talk about the why. When a doctor is thinking about selling to private equity, selling to a DSO, what is the why that they should be thinking about? Like, who is a good candidate to do this and who is not a good candidate to do this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So that's where we start every conversation with every client is tell me about your why. And normally it's multifaceted. So the things that should come into play are economics, right? What is the practice worth in the DSO world versus the private buyer world? Another big thing is, what is your runway to exiting the business? Whether we're talking about retirement, relocation, whatever it may be. And then, are you looking for help from an operational perspective, from an administrative perspective? Are you fed up with managing the business? That's a big reason why a lot of people are looking to affiliate with a DSO at the moment. You know, how much of your net worth is tied up in your business? And does it make sense to de-risk by taking some chips off the table, and then diversifying your wealth by investing those proceeds in other asset classes outside of your business. All of those decisions need to be, you know, explored, right? And then we craft a narrative if and when we're going to go to market as to who you are and what you're looking to accomplish. So a lot of the conversations obviously center around economics, doing an EBIT analysis, quantifying what the business is worth, and then doing some economic modeling as well as tax modeling to show clients, what does this scenario look like comparative to not selling and hanging on to the business and then eventually selling it to a private buyer? What are the tax implications at sale? And then what do the cash proceeds look like at close? What does your income look like along the way? What would a recap potentially look like if and when you're able to exit the equity component? And then what does that look like globally comparative to the other options that you have available to you?
And doctors, we're going to get to what, because you've all heard the term EBITDA, and you can say EBITDA. It took me a while to learn how to say EBITDA, but we're going to explain to you what EBITDA is in a minute. So, okay, I started off the conversation before I brought you on by talking about not signing a letter of intent. So you and I both know that the DSOs out there, and there's what, 500 to 700 of them, I think is what you and I have talked about. They have, the sophisticated ones, they have marketing teams, and they target the areas that they want to be in and the practices that they know could be candidates. And they call these people or they contact these people and they say, oh my God, here it is. I mean, we want you. You're exactly what we're looking for. So talk about how this process works, okay? You know, a DSO contacts a buyer without a sell side advisor, whether it be you or somebody else. And how does it work? I mean, again, and let's talk about this LOI and what does an LOI commit them to? So get into that conversation.
Yeah, so DSOs have built large marketing machines, business development teams that knock doors and, you know, incentivize doctors, industry people to introduce doctors to them because their fantasy is that they're talking to a doctor one-on-one without Ide Bailey at the table, without a sell-side advisor at the table, without a strong dental attorney at the table, because they're opportunistic. They have a responsibility to their investors to buy low and sell high. Private equity is in this industry and many, many other industries in healthcare and otherwise to make money. And the easiest way to make money is to do off-market deals, right? To get a doctor on the hook and negotiate a deal in the dark without them having proper representation. And the number one way that DSOs are opportunistic is to convince you that your EBITDA is lower than it actually is. So EBITDA, let's get into it, stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Think of EBITDA as absentee owner profit. So you've got revenue minus overhead, true overhead, after adding back any personal, discretionary, or non-recurring expenses. And then you've got a doctor wage, you know, a market wage that you have to pay the doctor to do the dentistry because the DSO doesn't do dentistry, right? So they've got to pay dentists to do the dentistry. And what's left over at the end of the day is EBITDA, absentee owner profit. And valuations in the DSO world are predicated upon calculating the EBITDA and then applying a multiple to that EBITDA. So EBITDA impacts the valuation more than anything. Every dollar of EBITDA is worth $7 to $10 in value. So oftentimes DSOs will try to control the narrative regarding EBITDA because you're not at the table, I'm not at the table. Doctors oftentimes don't know their financials backwards and forwards and don't know how to do an accurate EBITDA analysis. So if the DSO is off market deal, they're controlling the narrative regarding EBITDA and they're the buyer. That's the last thing you want because oftentimes they will convince you that your EBITDA is lower, artificially lower than it actually is, and dangle the carrot of a sexy multiple. So let's just run through a financial exercise real quick. So top line revenue, $2 million. EBITDA, $500,000. Really healthy EBITDA margin, 25% EBITDA margin. $500,000 is the real EBITDA. If I was to calculate the EBITDA, that's the EBITDA figure that I would come up with. And your practice might be worth, let's say, 7 times EBITDA in the open market if we're running a blind bid process us and creating essentially a bidding war between as many DSOs as possible. Well, $500,000 in EBITDA times a 7x multiple is a $3.5 million valuation if you follow our process and it's done right. But the DSO will often come in and they'll dangle the carrot of a sexy EBITDA multiple, maybe an 8x multiple, but they'll try to convince you that your EBITDA is $300,000 rather than $500,000. Well, 8 times $300,000 is a $2.4 million valuation. Right there, you've left $1 million on the table, even though you got a higher EBITDA multiple because they undercut you on the EBITDA. And that's the type of tricks that DSOs use to buy low and sell high. So they're going to solicit you if you've got a large, successful practice. They're going to try to convince you not to have a sell-side advisor and to trust them to educate you on what their EBITDA is. They're going to convince you that they're the best DSO in the world and therefore you shouldn't date around. And the reality is, if you do a deal in the dark, if you sign an unsolicited offer, you are going to leave likely millions of dollars on the table and the risk that you sell to the wrong buyer that doesn't align with your why because you didn't have perspective. You didn't have optionality because you didn't have a multiple offer situation. And letters of intent are not binding outside of one provision typically. And that is an exclusivity provision that precludes you at the point after you sign an LOI from talking to a sell side advisor or any other DSO buyers that might be interested in your practice.
And that would be like doctors going out, getting someone who says, I want to buy your house. I'm a great buyer. I've got financing. Let's get into an LOI, but you can't go solicit any other buyers for your house who might make you a higher offer. It's the same concept. So another thing I want to touch on, which I've come to learn from you and other people in the industry, is that it seems like a lot of the sellers, you would think that because they want you to stay for 3 to 5 years, that this would be an exit strategy for doctors in their, you know, maybe 50s, 60s, and 70s. But you and I have talked about the fact that a lot of the sellers are in their 30s and 40s. Why do you think that is?
It's a combination of a number of things. So for one, young people are not adverse to change. And they're more transient. They tend to move around a lot more. So the idea of like planting a flag and owning a practice for 35 years, like their predecessor did, you know, many young people can't fathom that. And many of them have moved to an area that they're not originally from. They've started a practice. They've done really well. And they're eventually going to relocate, you know, at some point in time to a new area or move back home. So that's one reason. The other reason is that the burden of management has grown pretty exponentially over the past decade, right? There's a lot of headwinds that private practice dentistry is facing, downward pressure on pricing reimbursement rates and upward pressure on overhead. And the larger your business gets, more money, more problems, right? Especially managing staff. So because the management burden has grown significantly, a lot of docs have looked to, you know, monetize their business earlier in their career to get help from an operational perspective. And with the mentality that, hey, I'm young enough, I could make several million dollars on cashing out this business and then do it again if I wanted to after I fulfill my post-closing employment agreement. So the average age of our client up until about 5 years ago was around 60. The average age of our client today is around 45 years old. So more and more doctors are looking to monetize their business earlier in their career for the reasons I just explained, as well as I think young people are more in tune with wanting more work-life balance. And if they're able to put some money in the bank and relieve some of that pressure and then get some help operationally and have a little bit more free time, a little bit more balance in their life, that's welcomed.
Now, the one thing I do want to point out to everybody is this. Brandon made the point that if you want to do this, maybe you work for 3 to 5 years and then you go out and do it again, you know, 100 miles away. And there are doctors that do that. But if you're 40 years old and you've got a 25-year window and you want to work for the DSO for 25 years, doctors understand if you have that $2 million practice that's netting $700,000, 35%, you're not going to make $700,000 working as an associate for the DSO. because they're going to pay you a wage based on what you produce. So you have to think about what are you giving up over 25 or 30 years, and is that the right thing to do? So that's kind of what Brandon, and he and I have had these long conversations about this. He's going to talk to you about, you know, if you want to work for 25 years, you could be giving up a significant amount of money that's much greater than what you would get from the sale. Now, if you're looking at doing this and then doing it again, I got no problem with that, right, Brandon?
Yeah, I think it comes down to evaluating that why and evaluating your runway and the global economics. If you're 40 years old and this is solely an economic decision, right, and you plan on practicing at your office for the next 20 years, outside of having some other element of why, work-life balance, operational support, you know, whatever it may be, outside the economics, if none of those things matter, and it's solely an economic decision, 40 years old, you're going to work there the next 20 years, there is a 95% chance that hanging on to the business and not monetizing it in a DSO affiliation is the right move for you. But if your runway is significantly shorter to exiting the business, or there's some other elements of the why, if you've got a large practice, it at least makes sense to consider it, right? Get an EBIT analysis done and think about, you know, what are my options? And a lot of people, and this is what really makes us different, a lot of people in my shoes are trying to figure out how to get from an initial conversation to a commission as fast as possible. We're blessed to be very busy. I've been doing this a long time. We have a very successful company that's been around 35 years. It frees me to give our clients completely objective guidance. And it's always option, you know, A, B, C, D. Option A is always, hey, don't change a thing. Keep your head down. Keep doing what you're doing. Private practice is not going anywhere. It is going to continue to thrive and be profitable, irregardless of the fact that private equity is consolidating our industry. Private practice is not going away. But let's also talk about option B, C, and D. Here's what those look like. Let's get you fully educated. And then whatever path you decide to go down, we'll respect. And if we have the opportunity to work together, great. We'll make sure you crush it if you sell to a private buyer or sell to a DSO or private equity.
So I'll give you guys an example. I referred a client over to Brandon, and he calls me up and he says, I've got two people that are going to make me an offer, two DSOs. And the first question I said was, time out. Have you signed a letter of intent? And the answer was no. So I said, just do me a favor. Just call Brandon and Justin Klingshorn, who works in California. And they had the conversation. Bottom line, this doctor's why was correct. He wanted to work five more years. He was then going to move, sell everything, go to a different state, downsize his life. The why was correct. It made sense for him to do it. What ended up happening, and again, I don't do promotional conversations and promotions for my guests. I don't have to because they're all the best of the best. Brandon ended up getting this doctor, I think it was about $1.4 million more, with the same DSO that had made them the lower offer, like we were talking about. And the other thing that happened, because I've been talking to him, he says, Art, this particular DSO has an incredible number of practices, and they have the ability, they raised my PPO reimbursements significantly. I'm making more money now than I did when I owned my practice, because not only did they raise the PPO reimbursements, but they were also able to, through economies of scales, cut their overhead. So, I mean, you know which deal I'm talking about, Brandon, and it's amazing. So these are the things why you need to talk to a sell-side advisor. Take a minute, Brandon, right now. Tell us a little bit about McLaren, how you work, and I want you to give out your contact information because I got a lot more questions for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, company's been around 35 years. You check us out on Google, you know, 115 five-star reviews. We're the only sell-side advisor broker in the country that has that type of reputation. And I think I'm most proud of that in our team. We have a team of 13 people that serve our clients nationwide. We've got a CPA on the team. We've got a former investment banker on the team. We've got a couple of guys that we actually recruited away from DSOs that were sitting on the buy side that know all the tricks of the trade that now stepped onto our team and are on the sell side. Many of us are former bankers, just a really buttoned up, bright, young team. We have offices in Austin, San Diego, and Atlanta. So truly, you know, local, regardless of where you're at in the country. And the way our process works is we always start with just a casual discovery call. Let's get to know each other. Let's talk about your why, learn a little bit about your practice, and then talk about, all right, does it make sense to do an EBIT analysis, to do evaluation, to do some economic modeling, to show you the global economic implications of pursuing a sale, whether now or at some point in the future, get you educated. And then if and when it makes sense to go to market, our job, for lack of a better word, is to create a bidding war, create as much optionality and leverage as possible to help you find the right fit, the right partner for your practice, and then negotiate the most favorable deal terms and the highest valuation we possibly can. And on average, our clients are going to receive a premium for their practice, 20 to 25% premium compared to the off-market offer. And that's what the deal in San Diego that you just went over. You know, it ended up selling to the same DSO that was already at the table. But when we walked in the room, they had to behave differently because now they were in a competitive situation. Yeah, it's like, all right, dad's here. You know, the kids have to behave.
Exactly.
So we can tell that story over and over and over again. And I would say about half of our clients are already in serious conversations with a DSO buyer at the time they engage us. We tell them, hey, press pause, hit timeout with that buyer. They're not going anywhere, although they may threaten to leave the table. They're going to sit right there and wait for us to do our thing. We're going to do an EBIT analysis. And then if it makes sense, we're going to go to the open market, including reapproaching that same buyer that was already at the table. But now, rather than them being the only person sitting at the table, there's 15 other DSOs sitting at the table jockeying for your practice. And creating that competitive environment really enhances the economics. And we're going to quarterback the process from start to finish. We're going to help you vet the buyers. We're going to give you a list of questions to ask them. You need to do a lot of diligence on the buyers, especially in today's marketplace, because it's a bifurcated market. Some DSOs are in great shape and doing very well. Some DSOs are really struggling financially. Our job is to vet those buyers before we ever allow them to sit down with you. And then once they're sitting at the table, help you vet them to determine which ones are the right fit for your particular situation.
Okay. So, Brandon, how do people get a hold of you?
Easiest way to get a hold of me, I always give out my cell phone number. I mean, you can call me, you can text me, 512-660-8505. You can email me at Brannon, B-R-A-N-N-O-N, at dentaltransitions.com. And check out our website, dentaltransitions.com. There's a DSO resources landing page that has a lot of podcasts and webinars just like this.
All right. So a couple of things I want to get back into the conversation. And what's the market look like now in late 2024? I know interest rates are up, but the Fed is telling us that they're going to be coming down. By the time this podcast comes out, there might have been one or two cuts in the federal funds rate. What does the market look like right now? What is private equity and DSO? What are they doing?
So the market post-COVID went nuts. Like, demand went through the roof. Private equity was absolutely head over heels in love with dentistry. As a result, valuations went up significantly in the DSO world. Practices that were trading for, you know, 5.5 times EBITDA pre-COVID, trading for 7 times EBITDA post-COVID. 2021 and 2022 were wild years from a M&A volume perspective in dentistry and across all different industries where private equity was investing. I would say we kind of hit the high watermark on valuations in 2022. And valuations have remained relatively steady despite the change in macroeconomic conditions, right? Despite the elevated interest rates, despite the fact that the capital markets have been somewhat constrained, and despite the fact that a lot of the recapitalization events have been delayed or muted over the past 18 months. If you have a Class A asset, a very attractive, profitable business, the valuations have been rock solid. If you have, you know, a Class B or a Class C asset there's a long story to tell, there's some hair on the deal, the financials are messy, those practices have been harder to move. And we've seen some compression in demand and valuations there. But the reality is, because of the fact that the macroeconomic conditions have been more challenging over the past 18 months, some DSOs have done remarkably well and weathered that storm and are well positioned long term. Other DSOs have really, really struggled, and some of them have failed, a handful of them. And the outcome for everybody else is somewhere in the middle. I'm bullish on what the next couple of years look like from a, you know, DSO market activity standpoint and valuation standpoint, given that every industry goes through these boom and bust, especially if you've got private equity involvement. And the past 18 months, along with probably the next 6 months, have been really the most challenging time that private equity has faced over the past decade, right? Up until 18, 24 months ago, they had been operating in ideal macroeconomic environment for about a decade. The past 18 months have challenged them. And I think that's healthy because people tend to get lazy, right, when things are really good. And they've had to sharpen the axe and get their act together, learn to be an operator, not just an acquirer of dental practices over the past 18 months. And therefore, they're going to be stronger for it long term. The weaker players have fallen by the wayside. The strong players are going to survive and do even better, you know, coming out of the next 6 months. So I think interest rates are going to come down pretty significantly over the next 12 to 18 months. The capital markets are going to open up. You're going to see multiple recapitalization events at pretty decent EBITDA multiples over the next 12 months. And I think the market's going to rip again, you know, beginning in, let's say, mid-2025 for at least the next few years.
And it may be, doctors, that you might want to wait 6 to 9 months to do this if this is right for you. All right, let's get into the different types of the ways that, you know, doctor says, I'm going to do this. They've got, you know, they're ready to do this, and the DSOs are going to make them an offer. So we know, I'll just kind of walk you through the different types of deals I want you to explain. Number one is the old traditional deal. You get a bunch of cash up front and we do a holdback or an earnout. That one is not as prevalent anymore, but talk about that because they still happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, those deal structures are still around, right? Where somebody tells you, you know, hey, we're going to give you $2 million for your practice. We're going to give you, you know, $1.4 million cash at close. The remaining $600,000 is going to be put on a holdback payable in 3 annual installments predicated upon you fulfilling your post-closing work commitment and the revenue and or EBITDA of the business remaining same or better as it was at the time we acquired it. You know, most of our clients that go with that type of deal structure, those deal structures tend to be used by the larger, you know, legacy DSOs that are out there. Our clients that tend to sell with that type of structure are late career, where they're not really concerned about the equity component and the arbitrage opportunity there. They're like, look, if I can stay on for 3 years and I know I can get all of my money by fulfilling my holdback obligation, that's enough money for me to hit my retirement goal and sail up into the sunset. So typically you've got a later career doctor or a smaller practice or both that's looking at going that direction.
Okay, so let's take the next. Again, we could do this for 4 hours, Brandon. You and I both know that. The next one is going to be the cash up front and then the joint venture, where doctors, you are going to maybe sell, you're going to get 60% cash up front or 51% cash up front and or 49, whatever it is. And then the rest of it, you're going to keep a percentage of your practice. Talk about how that works.
Yeah, the joint venture JV model has really caught fire over the past, you know, 5 years. And in this scenario, it's a true partnership model. The DSO is going to buy a majority interest in your business, anywhere from 51 to 70%. You're going to retain, you know, 30 to 49% equity within your own practice. And you're going to get, obviously, you know, whatever you sell, you're going to get cash at closing. And the remainder is true equity in your own business. You're going to get your pro rata share of EBITDA on an ongoing basis long term after the management fee that DSO is going to charge the practice to deliver those economies of scale and centralized infrastructure. You know, typically somewhere in the range of, let's say, 3 to 7% of revenue, where you typically find that the management fee is going to land. So it's a true partnership model. You know, as opposed to selling an equity interest to another doctor, you're simply selling an equity interest to a DSO. A lot of our younger clients have gravitated towards the joint venture model because they get to hang on to a significant piece of the EBITDA of their business. So post-sale, they're not just living off their chairside wage. They also have an ongoing EBITDA distribution that is significant. And especially if you've got a long runway, not giving up all of the EBITDA immediately at closing is attractive, you know, for younger doctors, as opposed to the traditional model or the holding company model that we'll talk about in a minute.
All right, so let's go to the third model, which I call the mothership model. In other words, you're going to sell 51% of your practice, 60% of your practice. You're going to get cash for that. And then you're going to get ownership in either a corporation or a partnership or probably an LLC that we call the mothership, that's going to be also a partnership or corporation of all the other practices in the DSO. And that somewhere down the road, they take that mothership and they recapitalize. I'm going to want you to talk about recap in a minute here. So talk about how that works.
So with what we call the holding company model that you're calling the mothership model, you know, think of it as you're selling 100% of your business, right? But you're going to take, let's say, 70% cash at closing. And then the remaining value of your business, you're going to buy stock in the DSO's parent company. So you're diversified in the sense that you own, rather than owning equity at the practice level, you own a little piece of all the practices under that DSO's umbrella. I mean, diversification can be a good thing if they're holding quality assets. It can be a bad thing if they're holding, you know, poor quality practices. So I think if you're going to enter into a holding company model, one, you need to understand that you're giving up all of the EBITDA of your business and you're betting on the stock and the DSO. You're betting on the broad array of practices within that DSO. And that you're going to be able to monetize that stock, hopefully at an attractive gain within a 3 to 5 year window post-sale at what we refer to as a recapitalization event. So at recap, that simply means that the financial sponsor, the PE firm or family office, whoever owns that DSO, is selling the DSO to the next investor, likely a larger PE firm or family office. And at that point, the investors, the management team of the DSO, as well as the doctors that are holding equity, have the opportunity to sell all or part of their equity, hopefully at a handsome return. You know, some DSOs before the macroeconomic environment changed were generating a 5 to 7x return on invested capital in a 5 year window. Crazy, crazy outcomes. In today's environment, you know, the returns look more like 2.5 to 3.5x return in a 5 year, you know, recap window. But whether you're in a holding company model where you're holding stock in the parent company, or you're in a JV model where you're holding stock at the practice level, you're likely going to have the opportunity to participate in some form or fashion at the recap event and liquidate all or a portion of that stock at a higher valuation than your business originally sold for.
Now, there are some instances, Brandon, where the doctors need to understand that they may not have the right under the agreement to get rid of all of their interest and cash out. They might have to, on their own, find a doctor who might want to buy 10 or 20% of their practice, which could be challenging, right?
Yeah, in the JV model, typically, I mean, the DNA of that DSO is to have a local doctor partner that has equity into perpetuity. So most joint venture model DSOs are going to require that a doctor hold a certain level of equity long term. So you might be able to sell down your joint venture equity at recap, you know, from 40% to 20%, but that DSO might have a requirement that that remaining 20% always be owned by a doctor. So at the point where you're ready to exit that 20%, you've got to find a buyer. And the DSO will typically help you find a buyer. There have been plenty of DSOs that have helped owners monetize that piece of the business. And I would argue that 10, 20 years ago, that piece of the business would be completely illiquid. No dentist would want to own a minority ownership interest in a practice that is majority owned by a DSO. But in today's environment, because of the mindset of millennial doctors and the Gen Z doctors, a lot of them don't want the responsibility of full ownership. They don't want to take on the debt. They don't want the responsibility. Therefore, there are more buyers out there today that are interested in owning that type of equity as opposed to the previous generations of dentists.
Or entrepreneurial type dentists who say, well, maybe I'll take an equity interest in five different practices and get some income from that. So, yeah. All right. Now, I know, Brandon, you and I have talked about this. There are some, we'll call them bad players in the space. I know we've talked about the roll-up. This is another thing that's out there is the roll-up. Talk about what a roll-up is and why, good, bad, and the ugly about that. And maybe what should a doctor, if he's hearing something, when should that doctor not walk but run from the deal?
Yeah, so I'll touch on kind of the bad players in the space and then talk about the roll-up. So I think it's important for doctors to understand that in any private equity-backed investment, really in any investment, there is risk, right? It's a balance of risk and reward. And in any industry, you're going to have a handful of companies that go to zero. And that's already happened. We've had a handful of DSOs go to zero. You're going to have a handful of companies that are going to get a unicorn outcome. 5x, 7x, 10x return on invested capital. And then everybody else is going to fall somewhere in between. A big part of what we do is to vet buyers and only put what we believe are the best options available in front of our clients. Let's steer clear of the companies that we think are going to zero. Let's focus on companies that we think are set up for long-term sustainability and attractive outcomes at those recapitalization events. So that's one is, you know, we do a lot of vetting to make sure that our clients are protected and we only allow the best of the best options to have a seat at the table and bid on our practices. And because, you know, you as a dental practice owner don't play in this sandbox on a daily basis, it's really impossible for you to know, you know, who the good players are and who the bad players are. That's our job. But let's move on and talk about the roll-up concept, because I would argue that that's not a legitimate DSO option or deal structure. And the way a roll-up looks and feels is somebody out there, whether it be a consultant or some industry influencer or whoever it is, they've got the ear of a lot of doctors, or they're soliciting and marketing to doctors. And the message is, hey, doc, your practice is only worth 7x EBITDA on your own. But by being part of our co-op, our roll-up, we're going to band together. I'm going to help you manage your business for a couple of years and make it more profitable. And we're going to loosely integrate the group. And I'm going to charge you money for that, right? You're going to pay me $25,000 to join. You're going to pay me $5,000 a month. In return, we're all going to sell collectively in 2 years for a 12x multiple as opposed to the 7x multiple that you're worth on your own. And the reality is that unicorn deal in the back end, that 12x multiple is never going to happen because private equity is not stupid. They are not going to pay an elevated multiple for an unintegrated group of practices that have no commonality. That whole premise was born in a very different environment. In 2021, when some DSOs were eyeing IPOs, money was loose, it was really cheap. There was this thought that private equity would be willing to simply pay for size because all they wanted to do was acquire and then flip the EBITDA for a gain. That ship has sailed. The dumb money has left the marketplace. Private equity is very sophisticated. They are not going to pay an elevated multiple for that type of roll-up. And for the doctors, it's death by a million cuts. The people who are pitching this concept are going to get rich, irregardless if there's an exit at the end. Because of the fee structure, $25,000 to join, $5,000 a month over 2 years. I mean, if they're making $150,000 per doc and they can sign up 200, 300 docs, they're rich.
Yep, they're rich. And I also have seen one or two of them where, on top of that, when they do, if they do sell their practice, which you're telling me is not likely, they're taking a commission that is 2 to 3 times what the market is bearing. So it's just, you have to be really careful. And that's why it's so, and doctors, call me, call Brandon, call somebody. Just don't sign up with somebody who's, I mean, they're never going to tell you, oh, you know what, we're like one of the really bad players, but we've got a plan and we're going to make it work. They're going to wine and dine you, and they're going to give you all this reason that you should just not think about it. And, you know, the Brandon Moncriefs and the Art Wiedermans of the world, they don't really understand what we're doing. And that's what they're going to tell them. And unfortunately, that comes more than not. Last question, because I do need to put a bow on this, Brandon. Do we ever get to the point, you know, I've talked about this, do we ever get to the point where, I mean, there's 200,000 dentists in the United States and less actual dental practices. There's practices that are smaller than 1.2 million. There's practices that are really not candidates. Do we ever get to the point that the DSOs have really looked at everybody and now we're kind of done? What is that? What does the future look like?
It's a great question, and nobody, I mean, nobody has right a crystal ball and can predict exactly what's going to happen. But I can tell you that there's a lot of people out there in the DSO world claiming that the market is 30% consolidated already. The ADA just released statistics that the market is 15% consolidated. So I think we're still in, you know, the second or third inning of the consolidation of our marketplace. And for every practice that sells to a DSO, there's a young entrepreneurial doctor that is buying a practice or starting a practice from scratch. So I think it's going to take much longer than most people think for the industry to get to 50, 60% consolidation. I think it could take another 7 to 10 years at least to get there. When we get there, what's going to happen is there'll be very little new private equity money coming into our industry because there's not enough growth opportunity. There's not enough practices to acquire to start a DSO from scratch because the market's already so consolidated. So when you hit that tipping point, let's say 60% consolidation, those DSO players, those private equity firms that are already in will stay in. You'll probably see some consolidation of the consolidators. So there might end up being, you know, 20 very, very large players as opposed to, you know, 500, 600, 700 of them. They'll actually start to merge and acquire each other. But I think we're a long way from there. And at no point do I think that private practice is going to be obsolete. I do think, though, that private practice owners need to pay very close attention to the trends in the DSO world, because there are things in order to be successful long term that you're going to have to do to survive some of these headwinds that the industry is facing. And that to me is, you know, becoming a multidiscipline practice, multi-specialty practice, a multi-doctor practice, more doctors practicing under the same roof to leverage efficiencies and economies of scale. You're going to have to be more sophisticated from a business standpoint to do well long-term. On our private practice sales business, we won't even take listings to market with revenue under $800,000 anymore because there's not a lot of demand from private buyers in that realm. And these headwinds that dentistry is facing is crushing those practices. So the days of being, you know, a four-op single doc practice doing $750,000 a year, I think those are going to be considered dinosaurs in 3-5 years from now. That is not going to be a sustainable business model long-term. But the multi-doc practice, the multi-specialty practice, the multi-million dollar revenue practice, privately owned, I think those practices will continue to do really well in the perpetuity. You don't have to sell to a DSO. They are not going to crush private practice.
Now, I'll tell you, doc, my listeners know that I've been a dental practice broker for 20 years, and I would cut off my left arm before, because I've had opportunities. Doctor says, I want to sell the DSO. Oh, I can take you to market, and the commission that I would earn would be significantly higher than if I sold it to an individual buyer. Most dental brokers out there are not qualified to take a practice to market because I don't know. I know the names of maybe 50 DSOs. I don't know. I don't live with them on a daily basis like Brandon and the other people in this space do. So it's like anything else, doctor. If you have a sophisticated patient that a prosthodontist would have to handle or a sophisticated implant case that should really be handled by a periodontist, you refer it to the specialist. That's what happens in my world. I don't do what I can't get the best result from my client because I don't know these people. So one more thing, and then we got to call it a day. Doctors, if you own one or two or three or five or 10 practices, or you're looking at doing this, Brandon, there are conferences that go on, and we're not going to mention any names, but there are conferences, really good conferences that go on all throughout the year where doctors, you can go to this conference and you can listen to the people that live in this space in all kind of marketing and building and scaling and brokers like Brandon, right? I mean, wouldn't that be a good idea for somebody who's thinking about this to get more education?
Yeah, I do think it's a good idea. I do think you need to be careful at a lot of those conferences and just understand that in this business, with the amount of money that's flowing into the space and opportunity, a lot of people have an agenda. Right? They're not objective. They're pushing their own agenda, but there are good people out there. There are good advisors out there. You've got to find them though. And they're not all created equal. Just as you said, most brokers are not qualified to do what we do on a daily basis.
I'm not
these large multi-million dollar practices, multi-doctor practices that are looking to go the DSO route. Now you're sincere and trustworthy, and that's why you refer. A lot of other brokers will just take it and then fumble their way through it, and you'll get an inferior outcome. So I would say it is good to go to some of these DSO meetings if you have a large practice and you want to get educated. But just understand that a lot of people at these meetings are pushing their own agenda, more so than going to hear the lectures or meet the advisors. What I like about it is creating a peer group, right? Because dentistry can be really, really lonely. And there are very few dentists that have multi-doctor, multi-specialty, multi-million dollar revenue practices. And at these events, they all come together. And it's cool to create that peer group and share war stories and learn. I think that's one of the best things that comes out of going to those meetings.
And the last thing I'll tell you, and I'll let Brandon give his information out, we'll call it a podcast. So doctors, if you're doing $750, $1 million a year, but you really like this DSO concept, you're late in your career, you might consider going out and getting yourself a really good dental management coach or consultant and build up your practice and get it to the point where maybe Brandon is going to say, yeah, let's take this to market. Because if you come to him at $750 in revenues, not only is he not going to sell to a DSO, he may not even sell it to a private buyer. But if you can take that practice and maybe get some new patients and maybe get some better, you know, add some services, sleep apnea services and other types of services, then maybe you are. So that's something to consider. One more time, Brandon, your contact information for anybody who wants to give you a call. And you'll talk to them, no obligation, and you know whether they're ready to go or not, right?
Absolutely. No obligation, completely confidential, very casual initial discussion. And I do want to, before I give my contact information, one point. I love what you just said. We get involved in doing valuations for practice owners very early sometimes, 3 years out, 5 years out from a potential sale to educate them. Hey, here's what your EBITDA is, right? Here are your strengths. Here are your weaknesses. What's your ultimate goal? What's your runway? What economic goal are you trying to meet? And then let's get the right people on your team to help you reverse engineer that outcome. So love doing valuations very, very early on to establish a relationship and coach people to the goal that they ultimately want to reach. But you can reach me on my cell, call me, text me, 512-660-8505. Email me, Brannon, B-R-A-N-N-O-N, at dentaltransitions.com. Encourage you to reach out. Would love to have an initial discussion and just get to know you.
Brandon, your information, as always, is golden. It's ethical. It's uncompromised. And I hope, doctors, that we've given you really good roadmap here in the last hour or so as to what we think you should do or what you think you should do. At the end of the day, it's your final decision. We are advisors. I'm a CPA advisor. Brandon is a sell side advisor. We do not live your life. We do not make the final decisions. So I would encourage all of you to reach out to him. If this is something that you want to have a conversation, you don't know where you're going. You know where you are, but you don't know where you're going. Again, I want to encourage all of you to go to the website of our wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, 140 CE courses at a very reasonable price, the best clinical content and articles on the planet. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. If you are looking for a dental CPA and you're not getting what you need from your current CPA, or you're not sure where you are financially, you don't have a financial advisor, or you have one that you haven't talked to in 5 years, the financial planning process that we put our clients through is incredibly comprehensive. It's amazing. Give me a call, 657-279-3243, or email me at A. Wiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at Eide Bailey, Eidebailly.com. Brandon, hang with me as I take the podcast out. Thank you so much for your amazing expertise and all the things that you've done to help not only me, but our Academy of Dental CPAs. I mean, you have educated us. I brought you into the group because we were getting these calls and we didn't know what the heck was going on. And you really did a great job of educating us. And we'll see you at our next meeting in New Orleans in October. All right, folks, with that, I'm going to call it a podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please tell your friends about the podcast. We've gotten wonderful feedback. We have thousands and thousands of dentists who listen every month. And with that, that is it for this edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Eide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@eidebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.